I am tired.
Yeah.
The weight of my own sleeplessness weighs upon me.
Just so like
like a sad blanket.
Yeah.
No, I'm, for whatever reason, just...
It happens.
I don't know. Yesterday I was tired too because I got up early, you know, we had my daughter's big party that we've been preparing for. It was on Saturday, so...
Did you wear your fairy wings?
I was not allowed. Corey, tough. I asked multiple times and was told, no, it's not for boys. No matter how many arguments I made, no matter how many cases I presented, it never happened. I did get to spend 2 to 3 hours both at the dump and at the landfill on Friday. get jealous, everybody. We did all that. That was exhausting. But then I got up on Sunday morning a little bit early and it was pouring down rain and I was driving in the rain and just, got up today for work and I was like, it's not like I have to go anywhere. I work from home, but still grumble. And so I've just been a little tired. But yeah. How you doing?
I'm doing well. I'm in the same boat. I think it was like the nice like spring heat for a bit. Uh-huh. And then, yeah, the past 2 days, it's been a little bit chillier, a little rainy, and all of a sudden, it's just like, oh, I just kind of want to curl back up.
Yeah.
But I'm doing well. Other than that, lots of gaming. We have news to talk about in the gaming world, but also finished Final Fantasy VII Rebirth, finally, which was exhilarating. We will be having spoiler discussions on that soon. Probably like maybe 2 weeks. Because we want to get our Metal Gear Solid in first. So be on the lookout for both of those in the coming weeks. But been able to like freely mess around with what game I want to jump into next, which has been very satisfying, very welcoming.
Love it. You said it, Corey. A little bit of news. This week, before we dive in, not a ton of stuff. Most of it's just some release dates. Metaphor ReFantazio coming out. I only saw the image, so I'm not sure in what format it was. If it's October 11th or November 10th. It was an image that said, oh, it's releasing on this date, and I don't remember. Okay, so they had an Atlas exclusive showcase. Good Lord.
Yeah, it's like a 25-minute trailer for it.
Okay, October 11th. Metaphor ReFantazio, Dream Game. I'm not gonna watch the 25-minute thing. I think partially because I don't want to be like spoiled on stuff. But like clicking around it, yeah. I mean, it is Persona as hell. It also has a look. I don't know. I mean, it does have some Shin Megami Tensei energy.
It feels like a blend into what does a game that combine both of these ideas really look like?
Slash
a little bit open worldness to it.
It does, yeah. The because if you're not familiar, if you don't remember, the Keith Thrillies last summer, they announced that this was coming out, and it's from the like Atlas Persona people. It's very Persona style.
Very Persona.
But it's more of like it's supposed to be, I think, more like a fantasy take, I think is the approach. Like Persona being like taking place in the real world with like you're going to school and you're in Tokyo and you're in real places. And then Shin Megami Tensei being much darker and in like post-apocalyptic, like it's the end of the world and you're, you know, it's all just you and demons is basically the approach. This kind of seems like it's a blend of the two where like, at least looking like just kind of scrolling through this, it seems like this setting seems a little darker. Because you're in this, like, you know, I'm seeing these ruins and I'm seeing just this, like, it seems like darker, maybe grittier fantasy to some extent, but you're going through towns and you're seeing a lot of people. And I imagine there's, you know, some element to some of that. I will say the art looks, I mean, even Persona 5 looks beautiful, but even compared to that, like, it looks like models have gotten an upgrade. You know, things are looking pretty. So that game comes out in October and we are excited. This Friday, Corey, Stellar Blade comes out.
Stellar Blade.
Everybody's favorite, potentially, as we've heard, better than Nier Automata.
Maybe.
Yeah, we don't know, but it might be. So that is coming out Friday. No reviews yet, at least at the time of us recording. So who knows? But assume that'll be good. Maybe I'm going to give it Metacritic score 82. That's what I'm guessing.
I'll go 86.
All right, Corey. Let's see who's right next week.
Well, if it's 84, it's dead of the middle. So it that's is. Kind of why I was like, all right.
Yeah, but if you go over, you lose.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Those are the rules. So
those are the rules, yeah.
Yeah, so Corey, you better know your stuff, my guy.
I mean, it could be like 98. It could be Goaty.
It could be 98. The reviewers are going to be like, what more do I have to say than look at these bouncing booties?
How would you like me to respond to this?
and they will. Exactly, but until we find out what they have to say, Corey, what else is going on in news?
Kingdom Come Deliverance 2 was officially announced as well. The follow-up to Kingdom Come Deliverance.
Everybody's favorite dank medieval fighting simulator.
I loved it. It was janky as hell. It is janky as hell. There were DLCs released and they were talking about like a huge, like additional DLC for a long time, which seems to just turned into the second game. For those who don't know, it's Warhorse Studio. It is set in old school, I believe Bavaria, Bavaria. I think, 13th or 14th century Bavaria.
Okay.
And you play as Henry, who is the son of a blacksmith, who kind of gets turned, put onto a grand adventure. Not to like his decision, based on decisions that happen to him. I talked about this, I think, early on in Arcade Cozy's lifetime when I was playing it. But yeah, it's medieval sim, like to a painful degree. You are like horrible at quite literally everything. You have to practice and like take lessons and like actually like learn the mechanics of the game. Lock picking is like near impossible. It is a brutal and not great, what's the word? Like mechanics to a game. I will say, though, over time, like, you get really used to being bad, if that makes sense, because it is like a medieval simulator, and so you are having to ride from town to town, and you're like, okay, I can go this way, much shorter, but I have to go through the woods, and there's going to be bandits waiting for me in the woods, and I can't fight off more than one bandit. If it's 2-on-1, I'm dead. And that's legitimately like you have very little odds of surviving in like 2-on-1, let alone like 3-on-1. So I'll go the long way around that's much safer in open fields where I can like see my surroundings. And but it kind of puts you in like an actual like person's shoes of like, okay, what's like, how do I survive here? Oh, I need food. I need water. I need rest. It's all these different things are kind of playing into like how you want to play. And for some people, I think that can be very jarring, very grating. I think in this game, they don't put their best foot forward with that. But over time, as Henry does get good, as the story progresses as well, and like these huge medieval like battles happen, the game is really, it crescendos very well. And I love it a lot.
Okay.
So they're making two, and they're continuing here Henry's journey. I think they said, oh, you don't need to have played the events of one to then play two. I would very much watch a video or a YouTube video explaining the story, because a lot happens in the story.
So this is a, it's a direct a continuation very much, of, it's not a Dragon's Dogma 2.
It is a Dragon's Dogma 2, but it's also a story follow-up. They have said, we are making the game we originally wanted to make, but we're just continuing the story on from there. And so I think they've said, you know, they've heard people's gripes. I can't remember the word they used, but like, you know, we want to make it more accessible. We don't want to lose the soul of the game that they're making, but they want it to be, I think, just a wee bit more approachable. They have basically, because of how well Kingdom Come Deliverance did, you know, they have a much bigger budget and they're like really using that to make the game just better to play. But I'm excited for it. Like I said, by the end of one, I was a huge fan of it, and I'm pumped to see what they do for the second one. And that's coming later this year. They didn't give us an exact date, but I can't see them like dropping this huge like live action trailer with the core cast and the directors of the game for them to like not to back out of like this year's release window. So I think they said we would hear more of it soon. So I assume at the Keeleys.
Probably. Did you know that it is now on?
It is on Switch. I would not buy it on Switch. I can't see it running well there. there is a whole sequence that reminds me of Pentiment, where you do have to like, I think it's very completely optional, but you fake being a monk at a monastery, and then because you're trying to hunt this guy down so you can kill him, because he's on the run from someone and they've paid you a lot of gold. You have like X amount of days to do it too, and like you have to go there and literally just be a monk. Like scribe, like copy the Bible, like do paintings, attend mass, do all these like things, but you don't have any weapons on you or anything, so you have to find a way to like kill him without anyone knowing it's you. And it's like a it is one of the better stealth like assassination sequences in any game I've played, because it's just like, all right, you're in this monastery, right? You're a monk now. We watch you all day, every day. Like, this is your schedule. And you're like, when am I going to do this? And you're like, you got a week. Yep. And you're like, oh, this week's going by real fast. It's hilarious. And I think however you want to pull it off is however you want to pull it off. With like, you get caught, everyone knows it's you. So anytime you go into that town, it's like immediate. Not that I got caught. I was looking up like, what happens if like people find out? And it's like the game is very much aware of what you've done and will not, these people will not forget.
Yeah.
So. Yeah. Okay. It's neat.
If anybody's, I never played Kingdom Come Deliverance, but if anybody's on the fence, I would like to cite one of the better reviews for it, Game Revolution, describing it as, if you stripped Skyrim of the fantastical creatures and magic, it is good enough of an experience to warrant enduring the game's bugs and shortfalls. So, run, don't walk.
I think this is on Game Pass, and I think it's like $5 on Steam right now. So.
Okay. Okay. Yeah, it's also, it also takes place in Bohemia, Corey, according to the Wikipedia.
I said Bavaria, but I think I was thinking of the Pentiment sequence.
Corey. Okay. What else is
there? Hades 2, Supergiant showed off a pretty large tech or test demo for Hades 2. Looks incredible. I did.
Yeah. People have been drooling over the new, some of the new gods and new redrawings of old gods.
Hades is a almost perfect game. We've raved about it so many times, Chris. I'm very excited for Hades 2. It won't come out this year. I doubt it, at least. But it will, it's, I mean, how could it not be 2026's game of the, or 2025 game of the year? I'm calling it now.
Corey, yeah. I mean, you never know, though. I mean, these games come fast and they come hot, and you just, you don't know what might come out. Could be Silksong. It could be Metroid Prime 4.
Hades.
It could be Hades. It also, it could be, have you heard of Hades 2? I've seen a little, I haven't seen the actual like gameplay that they've shown off.
It looks
off.
So good.
I could do, I mean, it's not like I couldn't put more time into Hades. I feel like I should go back and play a little bit of Hades. I could do that. I mean, it's going to be a while before Hades.
See, I want to, but so. I requested the, because you could request on Steam to be part of their like tech, like demo or their test. And I requested that. And I'm like, please choose me. If there's anyone at Supergiant Games that's listening to this, I doubt it. But if there are, please.
We will talk about it if you let us. Please. So. I should have read something like this ahead of time. I came across an article where it was somebody being like, I spent 100+ hours in Hades. Here are my impressions of Hades 2. And they have a table of contents thing that says different, not better. And I'm just interested in knowing what that means. But I guess we're not going to find out right now. It's a Digital Trends article. If anybody wants to read it, go look it up.
The biggest difference, I would say, from what I can see, because I watched probably like 30, 45 minutes of the demo that they showed off. It's like a 4-hour like test sequence or demo sequence. And you now have a magic meter instead of throwing like the gems and just the health bar. You also have like a magic meter where it seems like you have either certain attacks like trigger certain spells, or you have like a spell slot, like a loadout of spells you could bring that would, they don't seem to be like overpowered, if that makes sense. It was, you had like 50 like mana meter, if I'm remembering correctly. So I don't think it's going to be like it's going to be a huge shift in how you play, but I don't think it's going to be like a one-shot kill with this anymore. How you could turn some of the gem shots into like ridiculously overpowered with Zagreus. I mean, I'm sure there's a way, a build for that, but this is like, it's going to be off the cuff or out the gate immediately.
And the big, I mean, at least kind of scanning through this article, it seems like the takeaway is, by the like different, not better stance, is like in some cases, like the sequel is designed to be better than the original, and sometimes either is or isn't. Whereas with like Hades 2, they're like, I don't feel like that is the conversation. They're like, the conversation is like Hades is probably going to be its own game, and Hades 2 is probably going to be its own different game. Like, it's not going to be a game that replaces Hades because of the different ways that it plays in comparison. Like, yes, it's the structure is similar, but it's going to be like playing a completely different, you know, class
and new protagonists. There's different, not worlds, but different levels of hell that you're like fighting through this time. Completely different new cast of characters, in terms of like your core, like base world or like starting entry point. No, I loved Hades. I'm very excited for Hades too. It was cool to see them show it off.
Yeah. Man, maybe I'll play some more Hades here soon.
Do it. You should. Everyone should. If you haven't played Hades, what are you doing?
But speaking, Corey, of what I've been playing. And what you've been playing. I feel like I've been playing stuff, but I think in retrospect, like also not a ton. So I finished Metal Gear Solid, the original. We won't talk about it a ton because we're going to record a bonus. And I also talked about it a little bit that last week. But, you know, the game continues to try and frustrate you right up until the credits.
It does. It does.
So yeah, you know, that was wrapping that thing up was, you know, I kind of wanted to jump right into Metal Gear Solid 2. I think because like I do from all, you know, accounts, like it is just a better, it plays better, it feels better. And I feel like once I get a, you know, not 30-year-old version of Metal Gear Solid, like I'll probably be like tuned into that a little bit more, but I just haven't had that experience. But wrapped it up. And then after our conversation last week, I picked up Civilization VI. Corey.
Yeah, you did.
PlayStation had it. And don't come here being like, how dare you play Civilization on a PlayStation? It's fine, people.
Yeah.
Calm down. They had the like Ultimate Edition or whatever it's called for like $12. Next. And it had expansions. It had a number of, I think, like additional leaders or something. I don't know. So I started playing it and, you know, it just continued. Like, it's a little bit of a flashback to getting into Crusader Kings 3 because of just the density of things. Like, it's a different kind of density because, like, you know, Crusader Kings 3, for some reason, I keep wanting to say The Witcher 3. Mm. Crusader Kings 3 is much more about, like, the people and their relationships. Yep. Like, you're building this up based on, like, these relationships that you're building with all these people, whereas like Civilization, you were building these civilizations with a goal of like trying to just, you know, overtake the world through like very specific, you know, easily digestible kind of means. But it still is there is so much going on, especially like once you have more than a couple like societies. And like for people who are not familiar with Civilization, I mean, it's like been around for super long time, but it's, you know, one of these original like what they would call 4X games, where it's a I can't remember, it's explore, expand, exploit, and exterminate.
Sounds about right.
Is the are the four. And it's this idea of like, so let's look at the wiki. So wiki is: explore means sending players, scouts across a map. Expanding means claiming new territory. Exploiting means gathering resources, areas they control, improving efficiency of usage. Exterminating means attacking and eliminating rival players. And so, like, that is the core of the thing. It plays a lot like a board game, in a way, where you're on these hex grids. you're, you know, you have turns. And so like every turn, and I know you explained some of this last week, Corey, I'm just
going to do your thing.
I'm working through it in my own mind. But it's, I mean, you're playing it like a board game. You're moving through these hex grids and you're trying to build up these civilizations, and all the civilizations have their own things. Like, these guys are better suited toward, like, I'm going to, you know, overtake, you know, other civilizations. I'm going to have like this, you know, warlike kind of structure. I'm going to really invest in military, or like these are going to invest more in like tourism. Like, I want people to come to my, like, you guys fight. I want everybody to come to me and like trade with me. And that be more the relationship that I take throughout history. But it's very, they are very dense and they are very tough to kind of like wrap your head around. So I started playing it. I've played, I don't know how much, five hours maybe. Played through some tutorial, played, you know, through a couple of eras of a couple different plays. I think at one I was, I did like random, and I ended up being like being Japan, and then another one I ended up being Rome, I think. And the, so it's a, it, I'm having a similar experience to Crusader Kings 3 in a way where like there's a wall that I think is like, that I just haven't crossed yet, where like I started playing it and I was really enjoying playing it, but I also couldn't overcome the sense that like I was doing absolutely nothing. Like in Crusader Kings, there would be that kind of thing where it's like, oh, I'm taking over, like I'm taking over this whole island structure. And then one thing, like I just kind of overlook this one aspect of the machine. And then all of a sudden I've been overthrown and now I'm just back to having one little duchy, but now I'm also a whole lot weaker. And for me to continue playing the game, I'm going to have to just like basically grind my way through the dirt to find my way back up to the top. And there is this
plot, you scheme.
Right. And that's the thing that I think that I have a little bit of trouble like overcoming is in my mind. I'm like, well, you know, because I think a little bit from like the dad perspective of like, man, it does feel, even though it's a game, even though I'm enjoying it, like there is an element of like, I feel like I'm just wasting my time sitting here, just like doing that. And with Civilization VI, it was the similar kind of thing where I was like, okay, I'm playing through this. I'm, you know, a game is, you know, at most 500 turns and somebody can win before then. And, you know, I'm at like 150 turns. And it's like, I feel like all I've been doing for like 100 turns is just staving off bandits and like pouring all of my resources into generating enough of an army to stave off the bandits. And I can't like take them out because I can't get enough. And I'm sitting there and I'm like, okay, Egypt is beating me in this. And France is beating me in this, and like Arabia is beating me in this, and I can't make any headway because I'm just trying to live effectively. And I'm like, I don't feel like I'm doing anything really. Like, I don't feel like I'm progressing in any sort of meaningful way. And I know that for one, that's not the right way to look at the game, but also two, it's not like there is, that's part of the story is like the overcoming in the face of like in that oppression. Like, and so there, I think there is a click that needs to happen in my mind, but I just haven't gotten there yet. And then I did try, like while I was sitting there, I was like, okay, because Crusader Kings was like giving me trouble. Like it was stuck on a loading screen and stuff and then wouldn't like load back in. I was like, okay, I still have Crusader Kings like installed on my PlayStation. Mm-hmm. Let me boot that up really quick. And then I hopped in, immediately had zero clue what I was doing and backed out because I was like, yep. No idea what I'm supposed to be doing mm-hmm. here. Like, I just chose like an easy story. And then even then I was like,
you make your own story.
Well, not even that. Just like, I don't even know how to do, like, I couldn't remember how to do things anymore. So I was like, why do I want to send out for more knights? I need a physician, but how do I do that? I can't remember. Mm-hmm. It was that kind of stuff where I just couldn't piece it together. So, I have Civ 6. I have some of the core expansions, Gathering Storm. People talk about it. Like, you know, I have some of these extra leaders that people love. I don't know. I need to watch some like beginner guides or something because it hasn't clicked with me yet. And I have played Civilization before. Like not much. The one that I played the most was the console one, Civilization Revolution, that came out on like 360. And I do remember playing that and enjoying it a lot. Plus, I mean, I've played whenever I was younger, like I did play, not necessarily like 4X games, but I did play some of these games and really enjoy them. And so like, I know I enjoy it in concept. It's just, I think, clicking my brain back into that mode somewhat, which I just haven't gotten to yet. So.
No, there's been plenty of times where I've been playing CK3 and I'm like, What am I doing? Then I'll go, you know, weeks, couple months without playing it, and then I get back in. But yeah, so much of it is like crafting your own story and legacy, so to speak. Like the moments when you get knocked down, I'm like, you should have killed me. Because now I am going to plot and scheme my way back to the top, and I will eliminate everybody who gets in my way. There'll be times where it's like someone opposes me, you know, and maybe my I lose the war. I'm looking at another war I'm in the middle of. I'm like, I have to accept their demands. But I'm like, all right, Duke Fazio, I'll remember this. I will remember this. 20 years later, he wants to revolt. I'm like, revolt. I dare you.
Yeah,
I will win this war. And I will send you to the gallows. Mm-hmm. I haven't forgotten what you did 2 decades ago. And it's kind of those moments of like, even if it's not immediately, it's like, oh, my grandchild will avenge me down the line.
Yep.
Is the line from Dune 2, like we don't think in years, we think in centuries. That's how you have to operate in these games. It's like this small slight, I will let it go for now. But I will remember it. I will not forget.
Yeah. I think a lot of it comes down to just not having a great grasp of the game itself.
Yeah.
I think if I were in that position where I was like, I know this game well enough that I can navigate some of those things, that I would feel that way. But like, you know, I think like the first proper game that I went into, Catherine of France, was like, hey, you want to open your borders? And I was like, sure, why not? And she just rolls up on my city and just like sneak attacks me. And she's like, haha, you fool. And then just decimates. And then like after years of war, ends up coming up and is like, hey, you know, you want to call this off? Now I just own your cities, but now we have peace. And I was like, sure, I guess. And there's nothing. And I was like, I don't really know what I'm doing enough to like come back from this. So now I just feel like I'm sad. And so that's a little bit of it. Is I think it has nothing to do with like, oh, this is not a good game, or even that it's not a game for me. Same thing with CK3, and I completely like acknowledge it. It comes from a place of like, it is like a 4D chess that I just haven't like wrapped my brain around yet. And so in a lot of cases, it's like, I could just go on and play me a nice old simple little JRPG where I get it immediately.
Yep.
And I think there's some of that in there too. I don't know. I'll come back to it.
Give it a bit more time.
Yeah, I need more time. I need to maybe just devote a weekend to watching some Civ 6 videos or something. And just kind of really internalize that stuff. And then maybe go back to CK3 while I'm at it. See if I can take over the world with my newfound knowledge. I don't know.
Just starting as the King of France. King, I think it's Philip or Louis, one of the two.
Yeah.
Start as him. You're golden.
Mm. Yeah. So, played that. Then I bounced over to, I'll talk about this briefly and then let you talk, Corey. The Botany Manor. I mentioned a couple of weeks ago, I was like, I want people to hold me accountable. These games are coming out on Game Pass. They did. The other game being Herald Halibut, which I also plan to play. But Botany Manor is like it's small. It's like 3-4 hours. And I would liken it most to like somewhat, I mean, it aesthetically from a glance, it looks very The Witness. Like it's very, you know, painted. It's a first person puzzle experience, but it's a lot of bright colors. And it's puzzles, like you're interacting in the world. Like it's not like you're going into these little chambers and doing these things. It's things that are actually out in the world. But for one of the big ways that it differs is like, for one, it's not like just floating panel puzzles where you're drawing, you know, shapes and stuff. It's, you know, the concept of it is like you are a woman, Annabelle, who is, you know, in her 50s, so the late 1800s. And she is the, I haven't learned yet or don't know if it really ever kind of talks about it, but like, you know, she and her sister grew up in this gigantic manor estate. Her parents, like her mom died really young. I think her dad died like, you know, 20, 30 years prior to the beginning of the game. And so they've kind of like, you know, they're managing this estate. And the, you know, Arabelle, she wants to be like a renowned and recognized botanist in the field. And so like, you know, you'll find a lot of, you know, you'll walk around and you'll find these notes and it'll be like a letter that she received from this thing based on like a submission of her book or whatever. And you piece together like, oh, the goal here is she is trying to, you know, foster and propagate these rare flower species for research. And she wants to publish this book. And, you know, at this point, I mean, not that she couldn't live for years and years, but it's very clear, like, you know, you find like an old train ticket and she's getting the senior citizen discount, even though she's like in her 50s, because like, you know, this time and age, like being in the late 1800s, like, you know, people didn't have necessarily the same life expectancy. Yep. And so like, you know, it's entirely possible that like, yeah, she may not be around for super long time here. And so like, you know, it's very obvious that she's trying to make her mark on this scientific community. And that's kind of the goal of it, is all of the puzzles are centered around you are like having these like off the wall flowers that you have to help grow. And so in like one case, it's like, oh, you know, here's this flower that only grows in thunderstorms. Like, so we have to recreate that. somehow. And you'll find all these notes talking about, like, you know, hinting at all these things, talking about, like, okay, in that case, like, oh, they're, you know, it's a note from the farmer being like, hey, why are you, like, you've been using your camera so much. Your flashes are scaring my cows. Hmm. They think it's a thunderstorm. Can you stop that? Basically, yeah. Like, and so you're like, okay, like camera flashes. And then you're finding like, okay, here's flash powder, but it's empty. And like, here are the ingredients on the flash powder thing. So maybe I can recreate it using these ingredients over here and recreate a flash. Like, it's that kind of thing where like the entire puzzle is surrounded around. We're trying to make this flower grow. And by and large, like the, especially like the first couple of chapters are very straightforward, because like the first chapter especially is kind of like a tutorial thing, and all of like you find three or four clues all in kind of like a greenhouse, and they all are specific to this flower. So it's like, you know, you're not cross, you know, just as a pun, you're not cross pollinating clues here. You're like the clues, it's just like, oh, it's one flower. These clues obviously pertain to it. It's a very small little collection of things. So it's very quick. And then once you get a little further, then it's like, okay, I'm trying to grow three flowers, you know? And so like trying to connect the dots and being like, okay, how do these connect? And you're wandering over all over the manor being like, okay, I need to find like this thing. And I remember this room over here. I remember like seeing this thing in this place over here that I couldn't get into before. Now let me go over here. So it's a lot of like, you're walking over the manor. It's a lot of kind of like just going back and forth and watching this story unfold. It's not incredibly difficult and mind bendy, at least not yet, in the way that like, The witness is very like, I need a pen and paper and I need to be charting this out like a madman. This is a lot more like a
notebook full of theories.
Right. This
or attempts.
Right. This is a lot more like you're just sitting back and you're thinking, okay, like how can I make this happen? You have to have attention to detail where it's like, okay, I need to know like this flower will only grow if there's smoke that's reminiscent of like the woods that it would originally grow in. Like it grows in forest fires, but it has to be like the wood that would be burning around it normally. So maybe there's a clue like in some poem somewhere, like, you know, of what it is. And so you have to like pay attention to the details. You have to kind of like internalize some of that information. And so it's rewarding in that way. I think like I'm in chapter 4 of 5. So I think at the beginning of chapter 4 or 5. So it could like really ramp up in a huge way. I don't know. But at least right now it's been just kind of a chill experience. Honestly, kind of reminds me, not for any particular reason, but it reminds me a little bit of The Unfinished Swan, or like What Remains of Edith Finch, in a way. Like there's an energy. There's an energy there where it's like those games still have puzzles, especially Unfinished Swan. But it's much more about like the story that they're telling. They're telling like an artistic tale, and they're much more with like Edith Finch and Unfinished Swan. Like they're doing a lot of like very artistic things in the environment. This is a lot more static in that way, but like, it reminds me of that, where it is more like it's telling a story, a gone home or something, if you will, where it is kind of a walking sim in a way. But it's really, it's really good. I'm enjoying it. I'm enjoying the story. I'm also just enjoying some of the historical context as well. Like, you know, this character, Arabelle, Annabelle, Ms. Green, as we'll call her, because that's her last name. You see a lot of letters talking, like, I mean, just blatant sexism about, like, her role, where it's like, you know, she's been on these expeditions and she has, like, she has all of this, like, thoroughly researched, well, like, documented work that she's done across all of these different, you know, university expeditions and all these things. She's like, oh, I'm trying to publish, or oh, I'm trying to get involved in this program at this thing. And she's getting a letter back where it's like, well, you know, but we don't allow women to participate in our botany program, because botany is a serious science for serious minds. But, you know, I know how you women get bored. So here's a book that we usually give children who are interested in flowers. Maybe you'll have fun with it. And is that kind of energy?
It's like, and you're just like, this is messed up.
Yeah, it's, I mean, and it's very like, I'm getting a very rounded idea of who she is as a character. And like, and also like, to some extent, like, I mean, I'm not a senior citizen, but to some extent, like, seeing a little bit of glimpse into myself, thinking about like, oh, like she is very obviously like, she's pouring all of herself into trying to accomplish this lifelong goal, like contributing to this science. She wants to be a published author with published research, and she wants to be she wants to contribute. And there are notes in there, they're like, hey, what if you just published, what if you had our uncle publish for you? That way your work is out there.
Yeah.
And you still accomplish that goal, even though your name isn't on it. Like, you can still feel it without it. Yeah. Like, and there are all these different like ways around it and thinking about how to do that. But you know, you can, I feel like you can feel the weight on her to like make this happen. Like, so much of the game is you trying to desperately, like, I gotta figure these things out, because like, this is my legacy. This is my way into making, it's not just like random puzzles for random's sake. There, it does feel like there's a through line here where you're connecting to the character and you're connecting to like, you know, what is very obviously like, yeah, she lives in a manor. She lives a life. Like, she wants for nothing. It's not like she's, you know, trying to rise herself up out of obscurity and whatever. Like, you know, she's not poor and in need, but you do feel like from a human perspective, like looking at her and being like, I understand your like plight here. Like, I get what's going on. I understand your struggle, and I totally like empathize with what's going on here. So you and me, let's work together. Let's make this happen. Let's get you published, girl, and let you contribute to the world. And so like, short game. I mean, more than likely the next time I sit down to play it, I'll finish it up. It's not a long thing. I mean, super neat, super good. I love, I mean, obviously talked about The Witness before. I also love like Unfinished Swan and a lot of these other games of that type. I don't think I could binge them like just back to back to back to back, but like, especially when I haven't played one in a while, where it's like some light puzzles, just kind of going around experiencing this story as it kind of unfolds. There's something just really, really chill, really calming, cozy even about it. And, you know, I'm enjoying it. Like it a lot.
Well, good. I'm very intrigued by it. It's 4 hours on how long to beat. It's on Game Pass.
It's 4 hour. Do I? Completionist is 4 hours. Like, just like main story is 3. I don't really know. I guess it's just if you take your time, because I don't know of really. I guess there's some side stuff. Like, I found some ducks around, like porcelain ducks Maybe like that's ducks. A collectible. So I haven't looked like through the list. So yeah, I mean, there might be, it might be things like that. Like find all the ducks, sit in all the chairs. I don't know. But yeah,
I'm intrigued enough to check it out.
Yeah. So yeah.
Nice.
Yeah. Game Pass. Check it out. Very good. Also, who's it? Who's it by? Am I familiar with the developer? Putney Manor. Made developer, Balloon Studios.
Never heard of them.
No, me neither. Small studio making games that let players escape to peaceful historical worlds. Their game is Botany.
I'm into Manor. This.
Yeah.
Okay.
So, yeah. This is their first game. Okay. Very cool. So, yeah. Love it. Corey, what you been playing?
I've been, so like I said, at the top, I have finished Final Fantasy VII Rebirth. Really happy to be done. I enjoyed the ending. Like the game a lot as a whole. I've jumped back into Like a Dragon Infinite Wealth. And I think I described it to you, Chris, as kind of like a breath of fresh air again. Because I don't want to disparage Final Fantasy VII Rebirth because I really liked it. I think it feels so tense with itself. The game itself feels like it doesn't want to stumble the entire time. Speaking of Rebirth, everything about it just feels like it has its like shoulders just a little raised, like bracing under this idea that that people wouldn't like it.
Yeah.
And I feel like Infinite Wealth is just free flowing and swinging and doesn't have that. And it feels great to back in something in a game where it's just like, where these are both games for monumental reasons. I won't spoil the story, but it's implied to be Kiryu's last hurrah within the Yakuza universe in the game. So you have six games, not counting all the spinoffs of like concluding his story, which holds immense amount of weight, where a game could easily tense up at that prospect, and instead it hasn't and never feels like it has. And it's just nice to play a game that I'm not going to say isn't taking big swings, because I think Rebirth does take big swings, but isn't afraid of missing on the big swing, so to speak. And so it's been great being back in that. You're talking ahead of time. I am near the end. I've wrapped up a lot of the stuff I wanted to already to kind of move my way on to the end. So excited to do that. Infinite Wealth continues, and still, it's a great game.
Love it.
Additionally, I've been playing Fire Emblem Sacred Stones. The Sacred Stones. And so if you've been keeping up with the news this week, which we should have probably said in our news, but we're going to say it now. The Delta emulator, which comprises of the Nintendo NES, SNES, 64, Game Boy Advance, and DS collections, was approved to be on the App Store as a legal emulator. And so I downloaded that onto my phone. I had a Sacred Stones already, just plugged it in and played like instantaneously, like within seconds, was like, yep, it's running, runs perfectly. And I'm like five chapters into that. So Fire Emblem, this is a old school Game Boy Advance game. I think Sacred Stones came out in like 1997.
Not here. It came out.
Early
to mid 2000s here, but
2004 here, I think. No, 2004 in Japan, 2005 here. Get my dates all wrong. My bad. Ew. Anyway, it is one of the older Fire Emblem games. It's a top down tactical RPG where you have your units like any traditional Fire Emblem game. And it's the weapon triangle of, what is it? Sword beats axe, axe beats, sword beats axe, Axe beats Lance. Lance beats Sword.
Yeah.
And you have your units and you're trying to win your battles. And there's sometimes different objectives throughout it. This is a story where it picks up where, like a lot of RPGs and JRPGs, there are the sacred stones or crystals. Yeah. And they have been divvied up amongst the kingdoms. And one day, one kingdom, the largest of them all, because, of course, decides to attack another kingdom. And that happens to be yours, as you start out as the Princess Erica. And you're on the run immediately. The game's teaching you how to, you know, do play the game. You have your trusty paladin, Seth, who is a monster. Literally does so much damage. He can almost like solo an entire map. I'm just waiting for the game to take him away from me because he's too good. But slowly but surely, you know, you're building up a ragtag group of people as you kind of go through the game. And there's a, you're on a quest to find your brother at the moment because he's fighting on the front lines. It's really good. It's considered to be one of the easiest Fire Emblem games, which has been nice, but that didn't stop me from losing when the first units I got. I got a Pegasus Knight like out the gate, and I'm like, oh, heck yeah. And they're like, yeah, you go and you rescue a character, and so you can pick up a character and take them with you and drop them off somewhere else. I was like, now go get this other guy. You know, but watch out for the bowman. He like they do a lot of damage. I'm like, oh, he's that's the game saying, like, you know, don't dilly-dally. Over there for too long because he'll get over there. I'm like, okay. So I move him over there and I go for the rescue, but I can't move him, my Pegasus Knight all the way back just yet. Very next turn, Archer comes up, drops him dead immediately. I'm like, well, okay. That was nice. This isn't like the newer games where you can kind of choose casual, normal, or hard. It's just there is a difficulty. And if you're if one of your companions die, they are gone immediately. And that was kind of jarring. And I had a save state where I could have gone back. I'm like, no, we've learned our lesson. Let's you know, keep that. And so I've rolled with it. It is good using the emulator because I can kind of do things at double speed or quadruple speed. And so I'll kind of like zip through some of the fights, which is really nice. It's made playing the game pretty quick. It's normally like 20-ish hours, and I'm sitting on like two and through like five chapters. Just because how the emulator works, you're just beeping and bopping. But it is very nice to just have a game I can pull up on my phone, get through a fight pretty quick, save state, then move on. Just save state, close it out, and I'm rolling. Really enjoying the game. I like the fantasy, this style of fantasy aspect to it. I love Three Houses, but it has that Harry Potter spin on it, which, I mean, I don't hate. I love Fire Emblem Three Houses a lot. Then Engage was like this odd, like futuristic fantasy. It kind of felt like it might have just been the art style. And this feels more like gritty medieval fantasy, which is very much in my wheelhouse, or is my preferred wheelhouse, so to speak. Loving the art style. Combat's great. It feels good to play a game like this again, a game that I was playing when I was like, I guess in 2005, I was 10. But you know, it just reminds me, I think I've described this before, and you might have this feeling too, of like being in the backseat of the car, Game Boy, and you're just like lost in that small little screen. And it's good. And I enjoy that feeling of whether it be on the couch or like out on the porch, and I just turn it on and I'm just right back to where I was before. And I'm loving that. It's a great time. It's something I imagine will finish probably shortly at the pace I've been going.
Love it. Yeah. I feel like one of my bigger regrets is because I owned Fire Emblem, just Fire Emblem on GBA. which technically was Blazing Blade, Blazing Sword,
Blazing Blade,
something like that. And then also Sacred Stones. I owned copies of both of those that I sold off years ago. I don't imagine it would be too hard to get them. I mean, everything's gone up in price, so I imagine it wouldn't be like super easy to get them back. But yeah, I loved both of those. Like, even though, and it's funny because, like, even though I'd loved and I have distinct memories of playing both of those, like, on trips and stuff, like, I don't really have many memories of playing Fire Emblem, like, at my house. It's all of my memories have to do with like playing in random places. I loved them, but those were the only Fire Emblem games that I played for years. Like, I completely missed out on, you know, you would think I would have gotten the GameCube one, Path of Radiance, which now if you want to buy a copy is like $300. Like, yeah, it's, I think Path of Radiance is like the most expensive GameCube game. What is the most expensive? I'm the reason that our episodes go so long, Corey, because I do this. okay. Well, according to this, it is the 12th most expensive GameCube game. It's going off of new price. Average new price is over $600, but used price.
That will do it.
Used price is less. The moral of the story being, what Cubix is on here? I played Cubix. Do you remember Cubix?
No,
it was a kids WB, like, really, I mean, in retrospect, like, looking at this art, like, it was that, like, early 2000s, how do I describe it? Like, you know it when you see it, like, even, like, Jimmy Neutron had a little bit of this, where there's like a glossy sheen to the animation where like everybody almost kind of looks like they're, you know, it's like they're trying to go for this, like, we're pushing the boundaries of animation, of 3D animation. And in reality, like, it aged really quickly. Cubix was like this. Comes to mind.
Oh, no, I do remember Cubix. Oh, my.
You remember
Cubix? What have you done to me, Chris? Oh, my brain. What? Cubix. On earth?
I know.
I remember Cubix.
Yeah. Cubix was a kids WB thing that came out of Korea. They had a game. Oh my God, there was another robot game. I wonder if you played it. Now that I've gone down this train. Custom Robo. That's what it was. Did you ever play Custom Robo? Battle Revolution. Yeah, Custom Robo.
I don't think so. I didn't have a GameCube, so.
Okay. Custom Robo was, It reminds me of kind of, it was probably like a kid's version of what Armored Core and stuff was, because you could like customize your loadout and all these things. But you fought in one of those like arena type deals where it was like a really small area. It was kind of like 3/4 view. It was, okay. Break out of this for a second. coming back to it though, I did not, for whatever reason, Fire Emblem escaped me for years and years, until I came back to it later. The first couple of Fire Emblem games were really, really big, and I've gone back and I've played a few of the ones that I missed. Like, I played Mm-hmm. Awakening, which is, you know, a lot of people consider as one of the best ones. I actually didn't like love it as much. I think like coming off of something like Three Houses, like much preferred.
Like the story and the writing a lot.
Three Houses. I mean, Awakening definitely like great. It just wasn't. I think some of the hype also kind of kills it in that regard, where it's like, oh, you're expecting, like, you liked another Fire Emblem game, mm-hmm. you're gonna love this. But I also played Echoes, Shadows of Valentia. That one was a little rougher. That one was a remake of an older Fire Emblem game. I mean, also own both of the Fire Emblem Fates. Well, two of the three.
That's for 3DS, right? So
Birthright and Birthright and Conquest. I don't own Revelation, which is essentially like the Pokemon Crystal up to the Fates thing. But I haven't messed with the emulator at all yet. Been seeing a ton about it because people are just hyped. I think the thing that like interests me the most is potentially like the DS stuff, again, just because of like how prohibitive some of that stuff is. I am also interested, like, and I guess this is a different discussion, but like I'm interested in the economy of games whenever stuff like this happens. Like, you know, I know that, I mean, emulators have been around for years. Like, I mean, when I was a kid, like, we owned a Super Nintendo, but like my brother also had like an emulator, like a Super Nintendo and NES emulator on his computer. And I would play like games that we didn't have like on there. And so like emulators have been around for so long, but whenever they like hit like this, where they're like, oh, they're widely accessible. Like for a lot of people, I feel like they're not super accessible. They feel really impenetrable, where it's like, oh, I got to have a computer and I got to figure out how to do all this kind of stuff. And like, it's still not like it's easy. Like you're just downloading games from the app store. But like when it's like, oh, it's just on your phone. And like, you know, it's a little bit more accessible in that term. Like I legitimately wonder what it does to the long-term economy of like, you know, DS games, for instance, that are incredibly like inflated and have been inflated for years since COVID. Do they come down to any extent? Like now that there is there's an emulator that allows people to maybe access those games a little bit more easily. Maybe not, but you know, it'd be interesting, like a year from now, like does that effect end up, causing Dragon Quest V to not be $200 anymore? Maybe now it's a 185.
I imagine there is like impact in regards to that. I think it would bring those prices down because it takes the people who like, I just want to play the game. Like I don't have to physically own it. I just want to play it. Mm-hmm. It takes those people off the table in terms of buying, so to speak. It's like, oh, now I have an emulator and I have a way to play it. Through some jumps and leaps, but I don't have to drop $200 to do that now. Those people, it's bringing that down because there's only, you know, a handful of people who are like, no, I physically want to own this and I will pay for it. But your supply is still low, but the demand's lower now. So it's going to go down.
So, I mean, I'm all for it because I would like to own more. I would like to own some of those things. Like, love to get a copy of Heart Gold. Actual like legitimate copy on DS. That'd be cool. Corey, I know you do, you dumb dumb. But I want one. Don't just want to play it.
I get it.
I want it.
Technically, Logan's. Yeah. He's lent it to me. But he hasn't asked for it back. So till he does. As soon as he does, it's his.
You know,
I see him like twice a week.
Yeah.
Just hasn't said anything.
You know, when Pokemon relatedly, and I feel bad about this. Alex, if you're listening to this, I don't know why you would be. We haven't spoken in, what, 15 years? I don't know. But, yeah, so I never bought the, like, Leaf Green, Fire Red games. And, you know, again, retrospect, wish I would have. But I remember we were in high school. And, okay, he was like, dude, this summer, I'm going to play through Fire Red. Take my copy of Leaf Green. We play through it. We come back and we fight. Like beginning of the school year, we do it. Never did it, but I still had his copy of Leaf Green. Who knows where that is?
Probably no, in your mom's attic.
Not me. I don't know. My mom's house is bound to be a treasure trove of something because like my Pokemon Yellow,
my Game Boy Color somewhere in my
pack. I feel like I lost.
They're like, I think you got rid of them. Like, I don't think you did. I think it's in a box somewhere. You just don't want to go get it. And I don't blame you.
Well, and I have such an unreliable memory whenever I was a kid of like, what did I sell to trade in for like another game? And what is still just like hiding somewhere? And I just don't know. So the questions that haunt me every night, Corey. Do you have anything else as we leave our listeners with this pointed existential question?
Yeah, where everyone's like, wait, where is my stuff? I continue to play Fallout New Vegas. It hasn't been a fleeting passion. I might be in it for the long haul.
There you go.
It's just so good. I think of all the Fallout games, it encapsulates the like aesthetic tone and like overall vibe of what Fallout's trying to bring the best. Outside of, I haven't played 1 and 2 yet. I'm thinking about buying 1 and 2. They're $10 on the Steam store. And to my understanding, they're CRPGs. And I'm like, I think I could get really into these if I was to allow myself. So stay tuned. But in the meantime, New Vegas continues to rip. The story's phenomenal. It's just, it's wacky. It's what you want in a Fallout game. And I'm still loving it. What more could I say about New Vegas, I think, other than, guys, it's good.
It's good.
Plot twist. I'm having a lot of fun trudging through Nevada. Fallout Nevada.
Look at you.
Yeah,
love it.
I think that's it, though. I have started Persona 3 Reload tentatively. Okay. I'm a couple days in. We'll see if I stick with it. Part of me is like, I think you said it, and I'm kind of, and maybe Fallout's filling that void of like, I need something just like more kinetic. And Fallout is that. Dragon's Dogma 2 very much seems that. Stellar Blade is going to be that. And so I'm in something where I think I need just more movement, more like synapses firing while I'm playing. It's not a bad thing. Rebirth was very kinetic, but at the same time it wasn't. You're still messing with materia, loadout, it's constantly changing out equipment, XYZ. And I know some of these other games that's still the case, but I don't know. I think I just need something like just snap firing at all cylinders. And New Vegas is that at times. So,
That's definitely the place I'm in. Trying some different stuff. Gotta take a break on the.
We got all year, man. We know there's not much left coming this year, and what is coming, we know when it's going to be here. So,
I think there's definitely going to be more than we think, but it's definitely going to be, it's going to be a drier year, in some respects. Granted, though, metaphor refantasio.
Yeah. Oh, no, no rest for the wicked. Also, when I went into early access, I haven't gotten it yet because I saw it's kind of running pretty janky on Steam. They've said they're going to release a patch here soon. I think I'll probably get it after maybe one or two patches. But that's the follow-up. Not the follow-up. It's from the creators of the Ori series, and it's their next big thing, which, I'm excited to play that. So,
yeah, that also looks really good. Yeah, so some stuff. We'll, Corey, next week, I'm probably going to be rapid firing through some Game Pass stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Hitting that. We will more than likely have a Metal Gear Solid 1 spoiler cast coming up. We'll be recording it here soon, and then you should be seeing that in the next week, 2 weeks, something like that. So get excited. Corey, I'm excited about it. Where can people find you on the internet if they want to find you on the internet?
You can find me at hash.slingin.thrasher on the internet, on Instagram, sorry. We don't post on Twitter X too much anymore just because it's accessible. Still a long time lurker there. That's it. You can email us at arcade_cozy@gmail.com. Send us, any thoughts, game suggestions, what you've been playing. Very happy to hear that. Or leave a, like a review on wherever you happen to listen to Arcade Cozy. Whatever medium love that may be.
It.
And where can they find you, Chris? And if they can't find you, who can they find this week?
Corey, you might have heard, there's a woman. Her name is Taylor Swift.
Yes, she did.
She came out with some songs. Follow her. She needs it. Only 283 million followers on Instagram at Taylor Swift. The
torture post department wasn't my favorite of her works.
I
do love the in-depth analysis of her and Matty Healy's relationship because I am a huge 1975 fan. But not my favorite of her works, personally.
Yeah, I haven't dug in deep. I was off work on Friday, but I forgot to turn off my Slack notifications, and it was blowing up with like people talking about the album. Not really like talking in depth. I'm sure there was some channel work Slack channel that was talking about it in depth, but it wasn't one that I was a part of. The consensus that I've seen is people being like, yeah, it's definitely like,
it's an album.
There's a lot of it. And like, it's not bad. No. It feels like we've gotten this before. Like, it doesn't feel like it's too innovative. And I've listened to a couple of songs off of it.
Her and Jack Antonoff have run their course, the producer songwriter duo.
So follow her. She got some pictures. There's one of her and Posty on there. Mm-hmm. He's got a little song with her on that album.
It is a good song on the album.
Yeah.
I like that song.
But Corey, until next week, this has been Arcade Cozy of Sectic. Why should your hobbies be too